It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We hear what's on the minds of a group of students from Beloit Memorial High School navigating a digital world with a growing youth mental health crisis in Wisconsin. What connections are there to social media use and an online life in those formative years? Join the conversation with your questions and experiences, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Megan Moreno is a professor of pediatrics at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, leading the social media and adolescent health research team. Dr. Moreno, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Why is research and policy so focused on kids, on youth, in examining the effects of screens and social media?
I think it's a great question, and it's complicated because I think it's an intersection of several different things that are happening. One is that we have seen in data, probably over the past decade, a rise in concerns around mental health for teens. So a rise in the prevalence of depression and anxiety and even in suicidal thoughts and attempts. And that has everyone very justifiably concerned about how we can do better for teens. At that same time, there's also been a rise in teens using digital media and having access to digital media. And so many researchers have wondered whether there's a connection between those two events.
That makes sense, looking at that particular intersection. And then there are so many variables, though, right? I mean, so many different apps and platforms. You have to look at all of those influence and kind of tease out as technology changes so rapidly. Is that difficult to do?
Oh, it's absolutely difficult. And I often worry that we look at those two graphs of two different phenomena increasing at the same time. And I think it can be really dangerous to assume that one is causing the other. You're absolutely right. There's so many other things happening in our world the past 10 years. And one thing I often hear from patients is that it's not that social media is leading to depression. It's that social media is a way that teens are connected and informed on all of the really challenging things that are happening in our world in a way that teens were not connected to that 20, 30, 40, 80 years ago.
TikTok has been certainly in the headlines in the news, and you know, the CEO testifying before the House Energy and Commerce Committee, dealing on a range of things like data privacy and national security, of course, and the harm to younger users. Do you know how influential is TikTok in teenage lives?
I think that TikTok has a lot of popularity at the moment, and it has a lot of design features that make it very appealing and very engaging. But as we all of your listeners probably remember, we went through a similar process with Facebook a number of years ago. So I think that they're asking good questions and thinking about really relevant issues, but TikTok is certainly not the only platform that has been through this type of inquiry.
And then it makes you wonder, is one social media platform more harmful than another, or how, you know, the algorithms that are used in it? I mean, that too comes up. I mean, how do you judge?
I think that's a great question. One of the ways that we as researchers think about these platforms is we really try to avoid the trap of which ones are popular, which ones seem cool, and really try to think about what are the functions, or sometimes it's referred to as affordances, of that particular technology platform. So examples of affordances would be, does that platform prioritize privacy? Does it prioritize confidentiality? So an example of that would be Reddit, for example, is a very confidential platform. You're not supposed to really showcase your identity. You showcase your opinions. Versus Instagram is a very high identity driven. You're supposed to have your name. You show off who you are. Those are very different affordances in terms of what that platform is telling you to show about yourself.
Talking about social media, and we asked Beloit High School students to pitch in here to share their questions. We have Dr. Megan Moreno at UW School of Medicine and Public Health fielding those questions. You can join in with yours at 800-642-1234. Dr. Moreno, let's start off here. A question from Trinity. Trinity says, many people still lie about their ages when creating social media accounts.
My question is, what are social media developers doing to enhance the safety for children?
What would you say there?
Yeah, I love that question. And we do see that's such a great observation and such a great question. And we do see that there are many platforms that are really taking a look at some of the evidence and some of the data and thinking about how to enhance some of those safety features. So some of what we have been seeing is discussions about allowing teens more agency in contributing to the algorithm that prioritizes content for them. Or I've even heard chats about allowing teens to reset their algorithm. So if you look at some content and it takes you down a rabbit hole that you're not feeling good about, having the capacity to just do a hard reset and rebuild your algorithm, I think that would be a really exciting option for teens.
How effective are parental controls on social media accounts?
Oh, such a great question. I mean, with maybe a few extremely rare exceptions, I have yet to meet a parent who was better at navigating tech controls than their teen.
That is true. I will second that. Let's hear from Nishan, who wants to know this.
Has social media been purposely engineered to be addictive?
Has it been purposely engineered to be addictive? Dr. Moreno, your thoughts there?
Oh, this is such another great question. It really shows just, these questions really show how deeply and thoughtfully teens are able to think about their digital environment. You know, I think there's this sense that teens are mindlessly scrolling and kind of sucked into social media. And I feel like these questions show what thoughtful users they are and that they're really thinking about their health and the health of their friends. So for this question specifically on whether social media has been purposefully engineered to be addictive, there's a lot of different thoughts about that. What we do know is that the nature of social media, the way that it will show you different content every time you log in, you can scroll and you might be exposed to different content. People have described that as being kind of analogous to a slot machine. You pull the handle, the dials spin, and you don't know what you're going to get. And there's that chance that you're going to get something really, really exciting. And that has been compared to scrolling on a social media site. So we know that for some people, gambling or slot machines or those types of environment where you go into the environment and you don't know what you're going to get, and it might be exciting and it might be boring and it might be harmful, that those can trigger dopamine for people, and that dopamine response can become something that you continue to pursue. So it can be addictive. But we also know that it's not addictive for everybody. Not every person who pulls the lever on a slot machine is going to continue to pull that lever forever. So it seems as though the way it is designed can trigger addiction for some people, but we don't know a lot about what are ways we could tell whether you have that risk or not.
And it's such a slippery slope, because if a teen has their phone on them almost most of the time or just carrying it around, it's hard to know when that crosses the line to be a concern, if it's kind of part of your anatomy.
It is, although it's interesting. I have found that many teens will speak very openly about this with their colleagues, with their friends. They will self-monitor and help each other think about that. And they do that in a way that, to me, is different than adults. I don't see adults having those conversations about, oh, I've been using my phone too much lately. Hey, you know, let's go do something. I need to kind of get out of this rut. And so while I think that adolescents have these risks, their brains are still developing, they're still learning how to use a phone, I also am really encouraged by the way that they speak about it very openly and are very aware of when they're getting that feeling of being sucked in.
I mean, we as adults just assume that they want a phone, but your research has found that some, you know, they may not even want it yet, that we shouldn't make that assumption.
Yes, that's true. That's true. We did a study where we worked with preteens, teens that were in the 10 to 12 area of age range. And what we found is that many of them described getting handed their first phone when it was time for their parents or an older sibling to get an upgrade. So, the other family member was ready for a new phone, and so they were handed the old one and said, hey, here you go. And teens are very aware that once you get a phone, it's really hard to undo that decision. So we had some teens say, I kind of wish I would have had a little more time without it.
Pediatrics professor Megan Moreno leads a research group focused on the relationship between media and adolescent health, fielding questions from high schoolers in Beloit. Your questions about social media, they're welcome along the way. Join in by calling 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Students from Beloit Memorial High School lead the way here on questions about social media and mental health. Yours as well. Thoughts are welcome at any time, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Adolescent medicine physician Megan Moreno leads the social media and adolescent health research team at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Moreno, let's hear from another student. This is Nolan.
Are there any efforts being made to encourage breaks and combat the anxiety, depression, and suicide in social media use?
What would you say?
Oh, that's
there?
Such a great question. Yes. So we are seeing some exciting discussions about the concept of taking breaks from social media. So TikTok in particular has been talking about doing some sort of process where after an hour on TikTok, there would be a pause and there would be some messaging about taking a break. Some of the other platforms have also talked about having maybe it's time to take a break messages pop up. I will say that one really interesting thing about this effort to think about having messaging around taking a break is that I think platforms will have to be really, really careful with how that messaging pops up, because we know that for many people, and for the adolescent age range in particular, being told to do something in a way that feels pedantic or feels like you're being treated like a kid can trigger that feeling of, oh, I'm not going to do what you tell me. So I think that there's been a lot of thought put into what would that messaging look like? How can we make it feel optional and feel like you're giving the teen agency to make this decision for themselves, rather than it feeling like you're being told what to do in a way that that feels like a power dynamic.
Mm-hmm,
so
like
I think that's
rule.
A really interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I think social media for some teens can be one of the places where they feel independent and they feel free. And so having that message consistent with that will be really important.
And there's also that feeling of missing out. Is it possible for teens to disengage, take breaks from these platforms and apps and still maintain their friendships?
That's a really great question. I think this is a place where understanding that so many aspects of adolescent friendship unfold on these platforms or are maintained on these platforms, I think it is something that's important for the adults in teens' lives to realize that, during the era where a common punishment was, I'll just take away your phone, that can be really devastating for adolescents in terms of being able to keep up with what's going on. And in some cases, keep up with schoolwork and keep up with, activity scheduling. So much of that happens on social media these days.
Rates of depression and anxiety and suicide in teens are increasing, and this is becoming very alarming in the research. And Maritza wants to know, what are the long-term effects for this younger generation using social media their whole life?
That's such a great question, and it really highlights how much we don't know about the impact of social media on the developing brain, on emotional development. We're starting to see some really exciting studies using methods such as functional MRI or functional magnetic resonance imaging that can show you what parts of the brain are lighting up, what types of information is being processed by the brain when you're using social media. And I think that's going to help us understand what the impact is on adolescent development and cognitive development.
And we've talked on our program about apps to help teens curb negativity, curb those negative thought spirals. Should we be using tech in this way?
Oh, I love that question. It's the dilemma that if there's a problem with tech, we need to build more tech that will solve that problem. And that's just such a dilemma, I think. And I think it's a difficult situation because for some teens, being able to use evidence-based, tested apps to be able to engage in activities like mindfulness, relaxation. There's even ones out there that can help with cognitive behavioral theory. For some teens, that gives them access to tools and strategies that work, or even tools or strategies they might not otherwise use. But it's also really important to not think that that's going to be a panacea or that that's going to work for every teen. There still are a lot of other aspects of the non-online world that are really important to bolster adolescents' mental health, like social connection, being engaged in your community, in your school, finding activities and interests that you love and that make you feel excited and feel good about yourself. All of those are also really, really important. So it's a both and not an either or.
Dr. Megan Moreno with us from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health as we get answers to Beloit High School student questions and concerns about social media. You can bring yours as well to the conversation, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Moreno, along those lines, I mean, if you see your teen withdrawing and lacking interest in activities that don't involve screens or lacking interest in things they used to really like, maybe it was a particular sport or an art hobby, what should you do?
Yes, this is such an important question. I think that for parents who see their teens withdrawing, see their teens losing interest in things that they used to love doing, seeing their teens not wanting to spend as much time with the family or even with their own friends, I think those can be symptoms that something bigger is going on, like anxiety or depression or bullying. And it can feel really challenging as a parent to try to navigate that and feel like you have to figure out the diagnosis and the treatment. And so one thing that I think about is that parents shouldn't feel like they have to navigate that alone. Of course, as a parent, you would want to have a conversation, check in with your teen. Are there things that your teen is comfortable talking to you about? And maybe it's okay if they're not comfortable talking to you. Maybe that's when you reach out to your pediatrician or another trusted adult within your circle or your network to find someone who can help support you as a parent through also finding ways to support your teen.
Xavier is here with a question, says that they are most worried about people feeling too self-conscious because of social media. Xavier says social media sets high, unrealistic beauty standards. How can it change a person's self-image?
Oh, Xavier, this is such a great question. One of the things that I think about with this question and I think about with beauty standards that are set by media is to reflect a little bit that beauty standards have been propagated through media for a really long time. There are research studies that go back to the 80s and look at 17 magazine and the impact of 17 magazine on teens. And then there's studies in the 90s and early aughts that look at some of the reality TV shows that were popular then. Jersey Shore comes to mind. There's an entire study devoted to looking at Jersey Shore and found that teens that watched Jersey Shore had worse body image than teens who didn't. And so it is helpful to put into context that these types of unrealistic beauty standards have been around for a really long time in different types of media. What's different about social media is that you have some choices to seek out information about celebrating all types of beauty, all types of bodies, looking for body positive content. And I have seen teens who have taken a list of words related to body positivity and punched those into their algorithm and really changed the type of content that they're getting. So this is an issue. It's important. There's evidence that supports that media can make you feel lousy. But the good news is within social media and the way that you can control what you see,
you can kind of change that. Let's pause there with Dr. Megan Moreno. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine mental health challenges of teens and the influence of social media use, informed by questions from teens. And thank you so much to such thoughtful questions from Beloit Memorial High School students. Call in with your questions and reflections. They're welcome here, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Megan Moreno is a professor of pediatrics at UW School of Medicine and Public Health, leads the social media and adolescent health research team. We're going to hear from Nolan and Nashan, who expressed similar concerns about social media's effects on relationships. So we'll hear Nolan first and then Nashan.
So we see all these apps engineered to like encourage these negative thoughts, but they're promoted as, oh, a way to hang out, a way to talk to your friends.
I believe it's good that people are able to meet people from a further distance away, but being so heavily reliant on interacting with people through online can prevent them from meaningful interpersonal connections, like face-to-face.
Oh, such great tensions there, Dr. Moreno. But some upsides, too. Do social media platforms have social benefits?
Yes, I also really appreciate these questions, and I think they really show the depth and thoughtfulness in how adolescents are thinking about navigating their digital worlds. We do know from evidence that there are several types of benefits from social media, being able to have ongoing social connections, as one of the students brought up, being able to stay connected to folks who are further away. We also know for kids who have minoritized identities or have areas of interest that are maybe less common, that social media can be a way to find others like them. And we see this a lot in the hospital and in patients with ongoing illnesses, that social media can be a way to connect to others with those experiences. We also see social media as a way to learn and explore. I remember a patient telling me that during COVID, she spent a lot of her time doing digital tours of all of the art museums across the world. And so there's really a lot of creativity in how adolescents can engage with social media and the online world in general.
And we, I'm sure, also make some assumptions about what they're doing online. And perhaps we should be more positive and realize that some of these things can really help them grow and develop interpersonally. But, you know, if we do have more awareness of the harmful effects and families are more aware of what are potential pitfalls, is that also a positive development here on the scene as we go forward with social media?
I think it is. I think that we are headed in the right direction of having more of these conversations and acknowledging both the risks and benefits. And I think that that helps us move away from the conversation of, oh, is social media good or bad, to be able to ask the tougher question of how can I make social media work for me? How do I limit the risks and optimize the benefits of it, which is a much tougher question. And there's not going to be a boilerplate answer that works for every single person.
I wonder what questions come up for pediatricians when they have their well check visits and what that visit, which is such a just a glimpse in time for that young person, for that teen, what the pediatrician is watching out for and looking for and what questions they're asking.
Oh, that's such a great question. And it's a big area of dialogue amongst our pediatrician community right now. And the American Academy of Pediatrics has really been working to develop more tools that will help what, as you mentioned, you know, usually it's only time for a 2-minute conversation about this really big, complex topic. And so one tool I really like that the American Academy of Pediatrics has created is called the Family Media Plan. And it's almost like a map that you can walk through. It's meant to be walked through as a child one-on-one with their parent or guardian, and they make decisions about rules and guidelines and learn together. And those rules are meant to be applied to the parent or guardian as well as the teen, which I think really helps level set that these are more expectations about how you're going to interact as a family and making sure that your devices aren't getting in the way of that.
Everyone is accountable, I would imagine, here. It, as part of this media map, it really shows that, you know, no one is exempt when it comes to these devices.
I think that's true. And to be honest, what we're seeing more in the literature and what we're seeing in our clinic rooms is more data coming out showing that parent media use might actually be a really important variable in the equation when we think about what impacts adolescent mental health.
What are some things parents can do to be a more positive role model with their devices?
Some of the effective tools that we've seen are parents being able to acknowledge that this is not easy for them either. I mean, sometimes after a long day of work and then you're going to different practices and you got to figure out what the meals are going to be and get laundry done. And I think being able for parents to acknowledge sometimes they want to take a dip into Instagram or TikTok or Pinterest or whatever their platform is, and being able to talk with their teen and acknowledge that that's tough for them too, and potentially make a plan together of, hey, you know, when we both get home, we're going to put our phones in this location. We're going to take a break from them. We're going to do this together. I think having those conversations, the evidence suggests, can be even more powerful than having a specific rule.
So just being really transparent about it as well, and kind of a teamwork approach. Talking with Dr. Megan Moreno at UW School of Medicine and Public Health, navigating social media as we hear from Beloit High School students who share their questions. And you can share your questions at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Share your experiences and situations, questions, stories about the media use in your household, in your community. Cadler has a question about what people post on social media.
The main part of it is, do you think social media defines who we are, or do you think we all put on a facade for like the public view?
Oh, do we all put on a facade or a public face, Dr. Moreno?
Oh, such an insightful question. So this is another question that makes me want to zoom out and think about where else do we put on a public facade? And there are studies about areas where people are commonly going to falsify the information they give. So one whole study was done years ago on whether or not people give the accurate weight on their driver's license. Another study has found that women are unwilling to share their accurate shoe size with people, which I find fascinating. So I think it is good to acknowledge that there are other places in our lives where we might feel tempted to present a version of ourselves that we view as the best self. Now, social media is a different animal because it allows us to construct an entirely online persona. And I think that what one thing that we see in the research is that the more you can align your online persona with who you see yourself as, your authentic self, the more healthy an experience you're going to have on social media, because people are going to be engaging and interacting with you as you are, rather than as you think that you should be.
You mentioned earlier that a really harsh punishment in this day and age is taking away that device, because that can also be a lifeline to relationships or even homework. And the National Center for Education Statistics says around 77% of schools nationwide ban non-academic cell phone use. What is your advice to school leaders who are trying to set cell phone use policies?
Oh, this is a million-dollar question, I would say, and something that the American Academy of Pediatrics has been asked to weigh in on multiple occasions. I think that coming up with a one-size-fits-all approach for all of the diverse learning environments that exist and all of the diverse kids that navigate those learning environments is really challenging. And, you know, we can think about a kid who has a chronic or ongoing condition and maybe feels like they need to have that phone with them to be in contact with their parent or be able to have a quick way to ask a question related to an ongoing condition. That can feel like, gosh, you know, that kid probably should be allowed to have their phone with them over the course of a day. And then you also think about the perspective of teachers who are working so hard to reach and connect with students and really feeling like the phones are getting in the way of that. And so I don't see a way that there will be a one-size-fits-all that works for every single school. But I think that it's a conversation that the AAP has been very careful to navigate, knowing that it's really important to have educators and teachers and school administrators at the table for those discussions.
But having a policy in the first place is necessary for these middle and high schools? Should they have a policy?
I think that they should have a policy if there's a way to enforce it. I think what I've often seen is that there's a policy and there's no way to enforce it, or teachers who do enforce it are not given support for that enforcement. So I think it might even be better to not have a policy that all the students know doesn't really matter than to try to craft something that is not enforceable.
Is there anything students should know about their rights in schools around these devices and around cell phones?
I don't have specific information about what rights those mm-hmm. are, or whether those are by county or state, but mm-hmm. I think that as schools think about crafting policies, you know, the questions that the students have asked during this hour have been so insightful. I think it means that students could be part of those conversations and probably have great input on what those policies might be.
Adolescent medicine physician Megan Moreno studies the screen diet of teens, the impact of digital technology and media use on our lives. Bring your questions, your comments. Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine online social connections and consequences on teen mental health. Students from Beloit Memorial High School lead the way with their questions, and still time to join in by calling with your questions, your observations on social media, 800-642-1234. UW School of Medicine and Public Health Pediatrics Professor Dr. Megan Moreno is here. Let's hear from Amory, who wants to know this.
How does my phone show me things that I had just been talking about?
Oh, and that feels so creepy, Dr. Moreno.
Oh, this is such a great question, and I think so insightful that this person has Avery has figured this out, that they are noticing that pattern. And sometimes we hear this pattern also when people describe Googling something and then looking on their social media platform and seeing ads for it. So I feel like this phenomenon really illustrates that whatever you're doing online is often able to be captured and shared with other sites, and it often translates into advertisements or social media posts, which I don't know that anyone completely understands all of the wiring on the back end that leads to this happening, but it just gets at that we are navigating in a world that is extremely public these days.
Should Amory be concerned about the targeted ads that they receive?
I think that everyone should be aware that anything that you're doing online, whether it's searches or social media posts or email, that it's generally really a public environment. And there are studies from decades ago that show that when people interact online and using their computers, they often have a feeling that it's very private. And there are studies that show that if you're doing something like online therapy, that you can feel more likely to disclose things that you're embarrassed or worried about than you do face to face. But that, I think, is good to recognize, because it's good to fact check with yourself that the online environment is really not private.
Alex wants to know, is data being collected on different people?
I think that we can say that data is definitely being collected and that we don't fully understand the scope or reach of it. But I think that it's safe to think that when you're doing a search or if you're posting content, that data is being collected and stored. And for social media, we're now seeing that data might even be used in other places. People have described on certain platforms seeing their own photos show up as part of advertisements or other people's work. So it is good to realize that we're navigating in an extremely public environment.
With teens doing their research and their studies, can you give insights on which countries have the most stringent social media regulations?
Oh, that's a good question. And I don't have a handle on all the different countries and what their privacy settings are and regulations are. And some of those may differ based on type of content. So, for example, in some countries, based on their cultural values and the rules around that, certain types of content is not allowed to be shared. And the platforms have negotiated with those governments to ensure that that content is screened out. So it's quite variable. And I don't have a good sense of being able to list each country and what those regulations are.
So let's hear from Cadler on what people get wrong about social media.
We shouldn't be thinking about ways to lessen it or control it, but ways to manage with it, a way to try to change it to have more of a positive impact.
Okay, so just managing it, Dr. Marino, what do you think about that approach?
I think that the framework of managing it is a really positive way of thinking about it, because there's so many other behaviors and activities in our life that we manage. We manage how much sleep we get. We manage what types of foods we eat and how much quite often. And I think that thinking about other health behaviors and how you plan for them and how you regulate yourself is a nice way to be able to take that framework into social media. So if there's certain times in the day where you know that you might be more likely to feel nervous or to feel negative about content that you see, maybe those are times in the day where it's not going to help you to engage with social media. Maybe there's certain times in the day where you're bored and you need a little bit of distraction and excitement. Maybe those are times where you are going to engage with content, but also being able to pick and choose what types of content you're seeking out, because what you search for is often what shapes the algorithm that's delivering more content to you.
If a teen feels they're being bullied online, what would you tell them to do?
Oh, this is a really tough one. And it's the literature and evidence around how bullying happens online has really increased and become more nuanced over the past 5 years or so. And a lot of what we see is that kids who experience bullying online are often experiencing it in the offline world as well, which can make things trickier, but also can allow getting resources and support. So some of the nuances of experiencing bullying in the online world are that you often can save it by screenshotting it. And before deleting it or getting rid of it, it is recommended to save it, because it might be something that you need when you're seeking support for it. One thing that we do hear from teens is they're often worried about talking to their parents about online bullying, because they're worried that their parents' answer will be, hey, just stop using social media or just don't go online. And so I think one thing we can share is for parents that that's often something that teens are worried about. They don't want to lose all of their access to the online world because of one interaction. And so being able to work with your teen on saying, what do you need me to do? What do you want me to help with? How can I support you? Those are things that parents can do to support their teen.
What about the teen talking with their peers in real life, not, you know, face to face, if they're having issues online or issues with someone who is their friend in that digital realm, but is not treating them with the respect or the dignity that they wish? What approach would you say there for that teen in order to have a real conversation with that friend?
We have seen really great examples of teens who are able to engage their other friends and their offline network to talk about what they're worried about, talk about what they might do. And sometimes that'll lead to the other friends stepping up when there's rude comments or when there's disrespectful communication online. That can activate those bystanders to step up and say, hey, that's not cool. Let's move on. Or try to find a way to diminish that tension. I think another thing that we see when there is rude or unkind communication online is that sometimes the person who's sharing it isn't even really aware of how their communication is being interpreted. So that's another layer that can be difficult, is that people might not even realize that what they're doing is being as hurtful as it is. And so in some cases, being able to have that communication directly with the person you're worried about can lead to them saying, oh my gosh, I didn't even mean it that way. And that can be part of the solution as well.
In our last minute together or so, a little less, can you leave us on a positive note for teens and give them some encouragement for going forward in their digital lives?
I think that the quality of the questions that we saw today, the depth that teens are able to think about the risks and the benefits of how they're navigating their digital world, all of that just makes me so optimistic about this generation of teens and how they are thinking about their own health and their own interactions online. And it really makes me think that we as adults have so much to learn from them and the nuance and the thoughtfulness in how they're viewing their online lives. And so I think continuing to have teens as part of the conversation when we're thinking about policy and best practice, I think that's going to benefit us as adults.
Dr. Moreno, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Dr. Megan Moreno is a pediatrics professor, leads the social media and adolescent health research team at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Big shout out and thank you to the students of Beloit Memorial High School. If you are a Wisconsin teacher, would like to partner on a program featuring student questions, get in touch with us. Email ideas at WPR.org. And do please take care. If you or a loved one is considering suicide, contact the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline by dialing or texting 988. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.